Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of Effingham Talks. My name is Tommy Morgan and I'm joined by my co-host Frank Norst. We are broadcasting from the lovely Stillwell Pines event venue located just outside of Springfield, Georgia. If you are looking for a venue for your next event, look them up at www.stillwellpines.com, check out their Facebook page, Stillwell Pines Event Venue, or give them a call at 912-665-2631 for a personal tour of the facilities. Our guests today are Effingham County Chairman Wesley Corbett, the Effingham County School District PUP Program representatives Kate Keith and Tara Lamb, along with Piper and PUP in Training Cyber, Kirk Brenneman, owner of Down and Dirty Dog Training, and Lorna Shelton from the Effingham Animal Shelter. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Good to be here.
This is another first for us. Effingham's first podcast with pups as part of our guest. We're pretty excited about that. Commissioner Corbett, we're going to start with you. Thank you for joining us today.
It's good to be here, Tommy. Appreciate your invitation.
Yes, sir. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself to start with?
Okie doke. I'm married 47 years to a beautiful wife. I have three children, all raised here in Effingham. Only one was born outside of Effingham, but they all went to school here. And I guess we've lived here about 40 years now or so in Effingham County, so that's home 45. Graduated from Georgia Southern University. I'm a CPA, had a business.
Right.
Yeah, go Eagles and do so good in the bowl game, but other than that, CPA was in business for about 16 years or so here with Wendell Wilson, had a firm, and then left that. Felt like the Lord was calling my wife and I into some ministry, so we started a church in South Effingham many years ago, served there about 12 years, and then left the church as I felt like God was calling me to another direction, and began to work with the city of Rincon. They needed some management and some financial support and help, so used my CPA knowledge to help them, and then went into some consulting, and from that became the chairman of the county commission, and now currently we are the directors of, my wife and I are the directors of a ministry in Kenya where we rescue children from the streets of Kenya.
Oh, that's amazing.
We rehabilitate them and return them to family. It's Agape Children's Ministry, about 6,300 children in the last 10 years that we have rescued and restored to family. So it's exciting ministry. So that's a little bit about what we do.
Awesome. Awesome. What helped you make the decision to run for chairman?
I just finished up working with the city of Rincon as their manager and finance director for about 6 years. And during that time, I saw the lack of cooperation between the county and the city. They seemed to be suing each other, not really working well together. And so that was one of the things that caused me to want to be involved and see if we couldn't be a better family as a community. Saw some things that I knew need to be done better. I want to see government run more like a business, provide services in a very professional way, efficient way, so we don't get taxes, you know, crazy. So there's just some things that I felt like I could bring to the table and improve the way and efficiency of what how we do government.
And what are some of the things when you did take that position that you administered to help build that bridge between the county and the municipalities?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. One, we began to meet on a regular basis, had meals together. We invited the cities to come to the county office and we provided a nice meal and we share with them what we're doing, things that were coming up, roads we were going to build to see if they wanted to coordinate the construction of their roads so we don't have to get two contractors. There's always been this struggle about annexation. It seemed like the county was always fighting annexation with the cities. And when I was working with the cities, I tried to explain to the county, hey, the city is part of the county. Yeah. Why do you fight the city growing? They're still in the county. You still get to tax them. You know, you're not losing anything in the long run. And so did accomplish that. We have a county now that's very friendly to annexation as long as it's contiguous, meaning it has to be property connected to property, which has really allowed the cities to grow in a healthy way. I think that's one of the, also, you know, having a city perspective, our commission does something that's highly unusual around the state. we give our city a $2 million rollback for roads and recreation because we know they are supplying a part of the service needs that the county would provide. You won't find any other county that gets a $2 million rollback around.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, and
again,
then also,
we all learned something here.
Well, even on the lost percentages, most counties, well, matter of fact, when I was working with the city, there was this big lawsuit between the county and the city on what's the percentage of it that we're going to share with loss. The government gives you a formula and everybody calculates it to their own interest, and attorneys get involved, and next thing you know, it's nobody's resolving anything. So when I came chairman, I sat down with the mayor of Rincon, which was the largest city, Ken Lee, and said, hey, what can we do to keep from spending $300,000 or $400,000 on attorneys? And we ended up giving them 2% extra of the lost, created a friendship between us and the cities by doing that. They got received several $100,000 more, and we didn't have to pay attorneys to come to that conclusion. That's one thing that really changed. We used to let attorneys speak for us. As the chairman, I told the board, we need to talk with our cities. We need to talk with those who have conflicts with us. We don't need our attorneys talking for us. That just creates cost and creates headaches. So there's some of the things that we were able to do with our cities and try to help them resolve some of their issues, water issues, sewer issues. We've tried to recently, we received a grant from the governor for a wastewater treatment facility to MGD, 2 million gallons per day. Many of you are aware that Springfield has a moratorium now because they're out of sewer capacity. So we've offered 25% of that capacity to them at no cost if they want to use it. So that's the kind of relationship the county and the city has developed that you wouldn't have seen in the past. So
I certainly hope that's one of the things you'll be remembered for. It should be to pave that path of building that bridge between the county and municipalities.
I think the relationship is better. Oh, I know it's better than it was.
Yeah, it is.
Than 8 years ago. And I'm glad. I think the new chairman will keep that going. He seems to be having a good relationship with the cities. He's reaching out to them and communicating with them. So that's going to be good.
What are some accomplishments other than that you and the current commission are most proud of?
Wow. I think there's a lot of accomplishments. I don't want to toot for sure my own horn, but like you said, the whole commission, probably one of the biggest things that have been accomplished is that Effingham County has the lowest millage rate of the 12 coastal counties. We have lowered the millage rate, I don't think I'm embellishing this, about 2 mils in the last 8 years since I have been chairman, and couldn't do that without the Board of Commission approving that and them running more efficiently. So that's been really good. One of the things I saw when I came on board is we didn't have any master planning. One of the first things we had done was have our water system modeled, asked the engineers to do that for us. We could plan better for our water and sewer. And today, as we speak, we have a master plan for our water, our sewer, our roads, our solid waste. We have so many master plans. There's a good roadmap. We've completely revamped our land use map so we know better how to approve zoning in the future. We've completely redone the type of developments that can be built in the county. There was nothing like this 8 years ago, and this commission's worked really hard. So that's a huge accomplishment, getting all that done. Probably one of our biggest accomplishments, though, was the hiring of our county manager. When I came on board, we had an administrator, and then they left shortly after I came on board, and we were about 3 or 4 years without any solid management. But when we hired Tim Callanan, he's been a home run for our county. Excellent manager. That's improved our staffing, so that's a huge benefit for us as well. Working with the state's been a great accomplishment. We're fixing, like I say, triple the capacity of our wastewater treatment facility. Huge accomplishment. We worked with the hospital to help them salvage. Hospital's crucial to a community like ours. Mm-hmm. When you're 45 minutes away from a major hospital and you've had a stroke or heart attack, you got to be stabilized.
Yeah.
And so we want to see our hospital stay intact and improve. And under the leadership of Fred Baker Witt and this board working together, we now have one of the top rated hospitals in the coastal region. Really proud of that. When during COVID, with the clawbacks that were happening through the Affordable Care Act, a lot of small hospitals were closed as the federal government wanted to regionalize medical care. And so their finances were very tough, and we were able to advance them $600,000 to get them through that. And then when they needed refinancing, we helped them get refinancing to save about $18 million, if I remember correctly, to our local constituents. So I guess the list would be long. There's a lot of work that's been done. And you're going to see some huge changes in the next 3 years with all this planning, new roads, resurfacing. It's going to be a lot better. The Parkway, obviously, is a huge accomplishment. That was kind of dead on arrival for so long. And when I came on the board, we made that a priority to push the state to get that accomplished and get it done. And, of course, you know that's going to be done hopefully by fall of next year. So that's a few of them. There's probably several I could list for you.
And speaking of Tim Callanan, Tim's one of the smartest people I think I've ever met in my life. I mean, when you're in the room with Tim, you're going to walk out smarter immediately.
Yeah.
He's just that brilliant. And from what I understand, you guys are going to have some pretty exciting stuff coming out that was in the works before you left.
Yeah,
I'm not asking you to go into detail. Yeah. I say it's going to be exciting when all that comes out, though. But you were a part of that.
It really is. We just mentioned the wastewater treatment facility, which is very important to our whole community. But there's going to be an announcement, I hope, in the next week or two.
Yes, sir.
Where we're going to solve we have not had an alternate water source. We get our water now as a county, some from the aquifer, but mostly from Savannah.
Right.
For the IND plant. And right now, if there was a fire in the south side of the county and the IND plant went down, we would not have any water to even put a fire out. So we've always needed alternative water sources. That's been a priority from day one, to be looking at how we can improve water pressure, water quality, and get an alternative water source. Well, we've looped our lines for water quality, saving hundreds of thousands of dollars a day in flushing lines. But recently we've been working with the state, and hopefully it'll be announced that we're going to be providing an alternate water source that's going to really impact our region, really impact Effingham County.
Yes, sir.
Stabilize our rates for years to come.
Yes, sir.
And give us that water source that should help our cities and so many others. So we're excited about that. Been working on that project a couple of years. Yeah.
Well, you'll definitely be remembered with that group that did that, for sure. Let me ask you, what's one thing you're going to miss about working with Commissioner Floyd?
I don't know that I'm going to miss any commissioner more than the other one. So I might just kind of generally, Commissioner Floyd is a real person.
Yeah.
That's what I like about him. When he's in a meeting, he speaks what's on his mind. He doesn't hide what he's wanting to share. He's not a politician. He is a lay person who loves his community and loves his county. But I gotta say, that's true for all our commissioners.
Yes, sir.
They are so selfless. They all bring to the table a different perspective. You know, Commissioner Floyd brings that utility mind from the Georgia power industry.
Yes, sir.
But you got Phil, who brings the developer mind from the development side. You got Roger Burdett, commissioner, who brings that logistics side, that trucking and transportation he understands better than most. You got Jamie DeLoach, and he brings this finance banking side. It's been nice to have someone, when I was dealing with the hospital and their finances, I could call Jamie and say, Jamie, this financing they're getting from HUD, that's not going to be good for our hospital.
Yeah.
And I could run things by him because he understands the finance side. So
I
had some folks, you know, all around that could really be helpful. Mr. Loper, he's obviously the old historian of Effingham County.
Yes.
He brings that institutional knowledge of the county. And so when we forget some of the, you know, the historical side, he reminds us. And so there's a great perspective when you bring all that together, particularly, like you said, under the leadership of Tim, who listens, and he responds with great wisdom when he gets all the facts.
That was actually my next few questions. What's the commissioners? What you were going to miss most with each one of them?
Which one will miss the most?
No. That was my questions. I was going to ask you each one at a time, but you answered all of them at one.
Yeah, because I really can't.
That's efficiency, Wesley.
Well, I just can't pick out one thing about each one. They each have quality about them, but their selflessness is the huge part. They're just so selfless in their service. You just don't see that.
Yeah.
In other commissions, and I was sharing with you earlier before this interview that I've worked with a lot of commissions, and I hope this county appreciates the commissioners that they have, their ear to listen, their heart to respond, They truly love this county.
They do. They do. Each one of them do. You're absolutely right. You know, we've been fortunate enough to have them, each one of them, on the show. Mm-hmm. And we had Tim on the show, too. Mm-hmm. Tim's story was interesting. His background was interesting. And now I understand how he's so effective and efficient in his position, because he had the background of being what they called a county, I don't know if I get this right, it's not a commissioner, it's similar to a commissioner in South Carolina. He held that position.
Yeah.
So he understands y'all side of it, but he also understands the county manager side of it too, which is pretty unique.
He was a director of sorts.
Yes.
The elected official hires someone to actually manage, I believe, with their county structured there.
Yeah.
And so he had that director type of position where he worked right in the ring of the politics, because once the politician was voted out, of course, his team left, and that's, Tim was part of that team.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Well, Commissioner Corbett, or Chairman Corbett, excuse me, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for all you've done for us here in Effingham. You will be missed, and we hope you enjoy your retirement.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I've enjoyed the time of service. It's been challenging. It's been a real blessing. So there's a lot of things I'll miss, but I'm looking forward to time with family and grandkids and a little bit of travel.
Good. Thank good
you,
to hear.
Thank you.
This next segment is one I've been talking about with Frank and Dr. Ford for some time. We are excited to have the ECSD PUP program on. Welcome, and thank y'all for coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the PUP program?
Yes, we can absolutely do that. We're trying to figure out this radio thing and who's talking. The PUP program is a therapy dog program within Effingham County School District. We do offer comfort and affection to those that we come into contact with, but we're also pushing forward to animal assisted intervention, which is a step beyond what most programs do, so that we can partner with children who may have some special needs, that we can work with their therapists and partner with them so that they can overcome challenges. In addition to that, we're also counselors, social workers, school psychologists, so we can help with counseling that comes up. We've gone to see children who have been suddenly relocated, had homes that have burned down, and various other things as well within our district. So that's a little bit about the PUP program.
How did it get started?
You know, help. So way back about July of 2022, I wanted to get Piper tested, and Dr. Ford allowed us to do that. I was moving to the board level, so that would allow us to have a therapy dog to serve the entire district. He did allow her to be tested. It was about a two-hour test. She passed with flying colors. But while we were at that, we were talking to the trainer, and he knew of a dog who was a service dog. They were trying to help become a therapy dog instead. And I knew Tara was interested in having a therapy dog. So we started this process. I have to tell you, we've been learning along the way. The whole building the plane as you fly it is definitely true in our case. But consequently, we have a program that no other district in the Lowcountry has, and we've been consulting with districts across the state to help set up therapy dogs there too. In fact, we've done two presentations for the Department of Ed on behalf of our program.
What's a typical day for a pup in the program?
So it can look different for different pups. So with Piper, who's with Miss Keith at the board office, her day is structured mostly in the office, but then she makes time to go and schedule time for Piper to visit with classes in different schools. Where another dog, for example, Junie, is with one of our social workers, Miss Reed, she's with her in the schools every day. So she covers Effingham County High School and Guyton Elementary, and then part days at the STEM Academy. So Junie is with students pretty much all day. And she even does a few home visits with our social worker when she needs to do that. There's a way to go about that to make sure the family feels safe and that kind of thing. But a lot of times it's very welcome. When you're entering a stressful situation, it seems like that having a dog around, especially a trained therapy dog, registered therapy dog, it does kind of ease the tension and help the folks relax so that we can talk about whatever it is that heart issue is that's going on.
Okay. So what is the role of a therapy pup handler in the school setting?
Well, we kind of balance a lot of different things. We are trained to help in therapeutic situations. Our district has specifically chosen for only counselors, social workers, and school psychologists to have them because therapy work is a natural extension of their professions. So we don't have, and I know this has caused some grief, we don't have teachers and other people to have dogs. It's really, I say, it's not a bring your dog to work day sort of scenario. Ours are purely for therapeutic needs. So
the handler is fully responsible for the dog, no matter what setting you're in, whether you're in a classroom, whether you're in a counseling office, whether you're at an event, like we've been to parades and fundraising events like runs and walks and things like that. So whatever, Christmas parties, just you name it, whatever it is that we're at, you have to be always on guard with what's happening with your dog. You take care of your dog. That's your responsibility first and foremost, to make sure the dog is comfortable and happy and safe. And then also educating the people that are interacting with the dog so that they know how to approach your dog. So whether it's a child or an adult, sometimes you have to just kind of, you know, give gentle reminders and guidance on how to appropriately interact with the dog.
And then too, when we work with therapists, the therapist will decide what that child needs as far as meeting goals. And then we partner with the pup and the therapist and child in order to meet that challenge. So that might look different depending on the size of the dog or the abilities of the dog. Piper is good for emotional behavior regulation. Speech language pathologists have come in. Noodle was great in individual counseling, but also his size, he would have been good with children that were trying to walk. He would have been great in that way. So we have the different pups each have a different skill set depending on what they like, and we kind of try and play to that as handlers.
Yeah. So how does a therapy pup help students with emotional and social emotional learning?
Well, I know some of the work that Piper has done is with preschool intervention. And so, as I was saying, the emotional and behavioral regulation is a big deal. So they have to be calm when they come over to her. They have to be able to pet and be soothing in that way. And it's not a reward if they... if they can't do that, they can't be near her. And so they don't like that. So they try and kind of get command of themselves in order to be able to come over. The physical regulation the same way. But the dogs really do help to bring calm. I think of when we went up to Appalachian to work with that school, with Barrow County, the dogs largely created an environment in which they could start to heal. So they would work with themselves. I mean, those that I was close to, I did work with, but largely they were able to just sit around Piper or one of the other pups and be together and just be honest and transparent and help one another in it. So it kind of creates a therapeutic environment, if you will.
Brings the temperature down just a little.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it allows them to be more honest. We did go to work with some people that were grieving at one of the high schools after a death. And they'll be a lot more honest with a dog than they would be without it.
Yeah.
And so we were able to kind of work through some of that too. I was thinking about when we were at your school.
Mm-hmm. Even some children, you know, they might be so upset in that moment of whatever it is that's going on, whether they're angry or sad or frustrated or whatever it is, and then they won't talk. They'll just cry, or they'll, you know, be upset, or they'll just shut down. But then when a dog comes in, they suddenly will start talking, or at least calming down where they can work through whatever it is that's going on, and they don't shut down anymore.
We've really just... this has really surfaced too when we've gone into some classes. The therapists have figured out that it was a great time to get the children to work. They'll work a lot longer with a dog present than they will without.
Really?
And so we started having therapists show up. They knew what time we were coming, and then all of a sudden they're there too. And so, it was really super helpful. And so it was good in that way.
What are some specific examples of how each of your therapy dogs or pups have made a positive impact on the students?
Piper is really great in adaptive classroom special needs group. She does preschool intervention, as I mentioned. There is one little girl that we have done a lot of time with. She's autistic. When we started with her, she looked like the little garden girl. You get that image with the little hat and the pretty dress. Mm-hmm. Well, she had the hat and she had a pocketbook and she had a camera and she couldn't be without any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so we started with trying to let loose of some of those things. So she wouldn't be with Piper, she couldn't have her hat. And so she took it off and she'd do like 30 seconds and pet and come back, put the hat on, take a deep breath, and then go back. Well, by the end of the year, she didn't have any of that stuff on. And in fact, she wasn't
That's
even
amazing.
Bringing it to school. Right. And then two, she started with two-word sentences, but by the end of the year, she was saying six-word sentences. Mm-hmm. But we started with Piper eats treats, which is three words. Piper is black. Piper is white. One little guy was doing Piper, or feed Piper. He was struggling with his F's. But then at the end, she said, "I see Piper eats treats." And it was not her just mimicking what we had said. That was a sentence she created on her own. So we really have done a lot of work with that particular child over a couple of years. That was meaningful.
I would say at the high school with Noodle, it was more of emotional regulation. And so he did really well before he retired with individual counseling. And again, sometimes a student might walk in the office and be upset, and without prompting, he will go over to them and sit quietly and put his little paw very gently on their lap to make sure they're okay or let them know he's there. So that's kind of where his strengths lies in the individual type counseling, small groups. Mm-hmm. Done some grief groups as well.
And that is the neat thing, I think, that our trainers told us, is that each dog has a special gift. So when we started working with them, we started looking for where do they come alive. Like with Piper, I mean, she'll let anybody pet her, but she really came alive in those adaptive classrooms. There was a little guy who was curled up on the floor, and she belly crawled over to him on her own and nuzzled him.
Oh, that's
you
amazing.
Know, so it's seeing those things.
Yeah.
That they enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And playing to that.
What are the benefits of using therapy pups in school for students with special needs?
I think largely it's helping them to meet their goals. They can sometimes have very specific goals, and with a little creativity, we're able to come alongside the therapists, the teachers, what have you, to try and meet those needs. I was in a classroom this past week, and they were trying to write their names, and that was really very difficult for them. And so with one child, if she wrote two letters, she got to snug with Piper a little bit and then came back and did a couple more letters, you know.
Yeah.
And it was more a motivation for her in that instance. But it was also really stressful, because when she finished that, she got 5 whole minutes to really snug with Piper in the beanbag, and Piper was thinking this is great. So that's just some of the things that we get to do.
What's the future of pup therapy programs in schools? Do y'all know?
We know what we would like. Our goal is to have a dog at every school. And so that is ultimately what we would like, to be self-sufficient and have a dog available at every school.
Yeah, we would love to have it to be more substantial. We just started a 501c3 organization. Because we all own our own dogs, the school district can't put a line item in the budget to pay for that. I mean, you can't pay to train somebody's personal dog with taxpayer money, which makes total sense.
Right.
So we created a nonprofit to help to raise money so that we can pay for their training. And that just came off in August, so it took us a whole year to get that into place, and so we're at the very beginning stages, so that we can pay for more dogs to be trained.
It's definitely needed. I'm pretty excited about it. I've been following it since I ran across Piper, like I told you earlier, on Facebook page, and I fell in love with the idea. I mean, it was. I was sitting here thinking, why hasn't somebody thought of this a long time ago?
I have a question. How would somebody donate to this? You obviously established a 501(c)(3). How would somebody donate to that? Do y'all have a?
Well, we've created a GiveButter account just so that it can channel through there and go right into the nonprofit's bank account. But also checks, cash, whatever, we can put it right into there. And it is an official nonprofit, so they get a tax letter and all the things that go with that. But just so that you know, it takes $1,250 to train a therapy dog. So it takes us a little bit of effort. We just got our first cohort paid off. We had 5 dogs in that cohort. So we just got it paid off, and so we're hoping to raise some money to be able to put more dogs in.
So as of right now, I guess there's no funding for it other than the 501(c). There's no funding currently coming from...
Correct. One of the reasons is because we own our own dogs. Okay. So if the school system owned the dogs, if the district owned the dogs, then let's say I retire, I wouldn't get to take my dog with me. And we're not built that way. No. None of us are built that way.
No, absolutely not.
So because we own
they would have to be a buyout.
Right.
Yeah.
So because we own the dogs, Kate and I worked really hard to start the program on good footing, as we learned as we went along. But now that we've learned a lot, we try to do a really thorough job of explaining the ups and downs and what the commitment's like, so that new people coming in, the new cohort, will understand, you know, what it entails.
What are some other activities that the pups participate in other than school?
We don't get to do a lot of volunteer work because they work full-time in the school anyway. So where we get to volunteer is like when Christmas holiday happens in summertime. And so in those times, we have been to the Children's Museum and during their sensory days. We've also been to the library, and they do the dog days of summer, the reading program there.
Camp Rad.
We've been to, there's been another camp too that happens in Bullitt County, but it's all foster children can go to it. It's Camp 7 in Bullitt County. And so we served as night angels. And so while the main camp counselors were in their evening meeting, me and the dog and some other volunteers were in the cabins with the students, and it was like for 3 hours. But that's for foster children across the state.
Yeah.
We've done the parades. We've done Nurses Week, where we take the dogs through the hospitals during Nurses Week. We've been to Effingham. We went there last year. Gosh, there's all of these odds and ends things.
So for Georgia Southern, we partner with them as a school district, of course, and so they've invited us to come into some of their classrooms to talk to current students that are, you know, working on either school psychology. I think we would have did school psychologists and then regular psychology or something.
Regular psychology.
It was a career class.
Yeah. That was the last one we had been to. Okay. So we try and help where we can.
Yeah.
You know, as things come up and we learn of opportunities. We also are in Best Buddies at Ebenezer Middle School. My son is there, and so my husband, son, and I, and of course Piper, we all help that particular club, but that's why we chose that one, because our son is in it.
So this, I guess basically, this is a collaboration between, and correct me if I'm wrong on the wording, school counselors that took the time to have their dogs certified, and the school board to make this happen here in Effingham. This is basically what it is.
We are all employees, so it's counselors, social workers, and psychologists.
Okay.
And we have we've taken the time to do that work.
Yes.
We practice with our trainers, and Kirk's one of them, and you'll talk to him in a minute, but we practice with them weekly as a team. So we do some individual work as we have need of it. So that's kind of how that goes. But yeah, it's heavily, it's labor intensive.
I can imagine. I can imagine.
And then it's expensive. That's the other thing. I mean, the 501c3 will help with the training, but then we pay for a light. I mean, the handler insurance is $600 a year, and that comes out of the Keith family budget in my case. But so, you know, it's our dedication to the mission that's going on there, recognizing the good that can come of it, and really just pouring into that as families.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank y'all and everybody else that stepped up to make this happen. You're definitely going to have our support from Effingham Talks and anybody else that we can rally around this cause, because you're helping people in our community. You're putting something there that's been needed. And thank y'all so much for coming on the show. But most importantly, thank y'all for what y'all do.
It's our pleasure. And I do want to say, too, our school board has been exceptional in their support.
Yes.
It takes a lot of courage to step out there and back something with teeth in
it. It was. It was a big step, so, and I commend the board and Dr. Ford for doing that.
Yes. They've been tremendous.
Awesome. Good deal.
I just want to say, you know, thank y'all. You know, one of the things I love about the show is that we always come on here and people always are running from each other. And I'm sitting here listening to you guys because, you know, I'm the secretary at the Springfield Lodge in Middle Springfield. And we work closely with social worker like Miss Ellie Parker, if y'all know her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We work with her after the sand in Springfield. And, you know, so what do you need? And she's like, of course, you know, get money, toys, food. I never really considered the emotional donation that you could do for these kids. And then I met Miss Ivory Brown from Best Buddies.
Uh-huh.
She called me up right before the parade. And she, you know, she was like, "Can you get us a trailer?" I'm like, "Absolutely, I'll get you a trailer. We'll get it all set up. Y'all come up here." And the more and more I started to hear about these organizations and what we can do to help, man, it's I get so encouraged by that Effingham has so much love that we can pull together to help y'all. And then that brings us to, you know, my next guest, Mr. Kirk Brenneman. He seems to be the catapult here to getting these dogs into y'all's program. And I've talked to him out there. I talked to him on the phone. He seems to be a very intelligent guy. He's very good with dogs. And I just want, Ms. Kirk, you just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go into your business, Down and Dirty Dog Training.
It is a mouthful, but thank you very much for having me. The business name is definitely there for a reason, because it's something you won't forget, because there's nothing else like it around here.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit about myself. I've been down in the Effingham County area since, 2017. I'm originally from Newcastle, Pennsylvania, so a little small town north of Pittsburgh. I graduated with 47 people in my class. Thankfully, I was wise enough to join the military, which got me to go overseas to Germany and be stationed there for a few years, gain some culture. And then I chose Savannah, not knowing it was going to be Fort Stewart. But that's where I ended up down here. And let's just say Fort Stewart's a place. Mm-hmm. But it got me into the Savannah area, where it's a big enough location for me to say, hey, this is nice. There's a lot more opportunity than my hometown. I moved back for about 6 months just to make sure I was making the right decision to stay here. Knew it immediately as soon as winter hit. So in about, it was 2017 in February, I moved down, used my GI Bill, and tended bar down at Kevin Berry's in River Street to put myself through the police academy. Then I got into law enforcement, which is what actually brought me into the dog world. I got the opportunity to go through police service dogs in Oxford, Florida, where I went through a 480-hour course to become a canine handler, where I worked a dual-purpose canine, narcotics tracking and apprehension for a few years. And then I decided I wanted to do something a little bit different than law enforcement, make a little bit of a name for myself without having the political side of things there as well. It was a eye-opener. I knew a lot about dogs, but I didn't know a thing about business. So I worked apartment maintenance for a little bit while I was trying to get my business up and running, because I want to make sure I had all the proper backing, the proper licensing, the insurance, and everything I needed to have a legitimate business. And then it was January of 22. With $2,000 in my account, I pulled the trigger and said, the heck with it. Worst case scenario, I have to go get a different job. And I've been grateful enough, especially with the community support, to not even have to think about looking back. So it's been a wonderful journey, a lot of risks, but it's been worth every aspect of it.
Great, great resume. Can I ask you, when you were at Fort Stewart, where were you stationed at inside? Because I worked at Fort Stewart for 11 years, and I was at the DPW in the very back there.
I was with 2-7 Infantry, right next to, what cab was right there. And it was right in the middle of 2-7, and they used to be over on the separate post, mm-hmm. and then they came back over to the not-as-fun place as the main headquarters, because you have everyone with a bunch of stars and stuff on their collars walking around, so you definitely have to be on your best Marne standard when they're
there. Right. But yeah, I used to love coming in, and as soon as I would pass by the guard, he would say, Rock of the Marne. So I used to love going to Fort Stewart. And it was a beautiful place. So let's start talking about down and dirty dog training. Tell us a little bit about where you got this idea, and tell us where how far you've come with it.
So the idea kind of came to me. I knew I've always had a passion for dogs. I've had a love for animals. And I was trying to think how I could take something that I love and that I'm passionate about and turn it into something that it can be profitable, to at least to the extent that I can pay my bills and not have to worry. So I took the risk and did some research trying to figure out how to open up a business. And for those of you that do not know, just go through the Secretary of State to do all your stuff. Don't fall for the scams that you get on Google. It's pretty simplistic. But doing that, and then I turned my garage into kennels, went and got my local license through the city of Rincon for my home occupational, and have my state license. And I had to go through Department of Agriculture to get my kennel license, because that is one of the requirements you do have to have when anytime you're housing animals for a source of revenue. So once I got all that, $2,000 worth of wooden supplies out of Lowe's here in Rincon, and then within the first week of me opening my kennels, I had my first board and train. So it was an eye opener. I had no idea of what to expect. But it was the first time I ever made $1,000 in my life. So it was pretty cool. And from that point on, once I got to see the results from the training and realized that, holy heck, there's a way I can make a business out of this, I was addicted. My first year, I think I worked over a year, a little 420 some days straight through. Wow. It's one thing I've learned, that if you start a business, you better be willing to put in all the work. Because at the end of the day, nobody cares about your business the way you do.
That's right.
Yeah. Hopefully here, now that I got the new facility opened up off of Blue Jay, I can maybe hire somebody. So that is in the works in the future. But you said, figure I started on a hope and a prayer and really working for the lowest possible price that I could charge and still keep the lights on.
That's right.
To where now my board and trains are booking out into April. I'm grateful enough to be partnered with Effingham County to train their therapy dogs alongside Lauren Finn with Finn's Animal Training, to work here with Miss Shelton and our Positive Changes prison program for over 2 years now. So it's been a wonderful opportunity to be able to do a lot of things within the community, none of which I thought dog training would bring me into. So it's an amazing journey every day.
Good. I'm sure you encounter a lot of different breeds. Is there any breed that's tougher than other breeds to train?
Yeah, I'm sure this will stir some feathers. We'll make it the easiest way possible. I would love to be making millions of dollars playing professional football, getting all these Nike sponsorships, but genetics clearly had a different plan for me. That's why we're sitting here having this conversation. There are certain dogs with certain genetics that we have to listen to what the Lord said when he made them. You're not going to turn a Yorkie into an apprehension dog. Chihuahuas aren't known for their best behavior. And there's a lot that goes into it, so not to directly call it any specific breed. Based on genetics and the lineage of that dog, whether there's the difference between your working lines, companion lines, family lines, there's so many aspects that go into what the dog's abilities are. There's 100% some dogs that are a lot easier to train than others.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another tough question for you. What's your favorite breed to train?
Golden Retrievers, I know.
Yes. So I do love me a good Golden. The Golden Retriever energy is exactly what it is. They will work for food from the minute they are born to the minute they are no longer with us. So it makes it great. Miss Lorna doesn't like it as much as I do, but I love German Shepherds. They're a very intelligent, challenging breed. I have a love for them ever since working with one in law enforcement. There's a bond within that breed. If you have the right dog and you know what you're doing, that you're on the same wavelength. You know, you don't have to think. Each of you know exactly what's expected when you create those standards and those boundaries. And there's just the way they look at you, and you operate so in sync. But German Shepherds, I mean, they're on one side of the spectrum or the other. They're either really good or really bad. There's not much of an in-between for Shepherds, especially nowadays with the ways breeding has played into almost a plague where people are breeding for quantity and not quality anymore. And there's a lot of things that go into it. But Shepherds and then your Retrievers are going to be my seconds right behind. I'm a little biased since I own a German Shepherd and a Chocolate Lab. But they're just wonderful. I mean, if you want a family line dog, Golden Retrievers, Labs, that's the best kind of dog you can throw in the mix there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd say Shepherds are going to be my top tier.
Okay. Well, I was talking to you earlier about service dogs, and, you know, we were kind of joking because, you know, we said you go on Google and you get a $25 certificate and you got your service dog. And we all know that's not realistic. But when you're training for a service dog, at the minimum, what do you expect that dog to be able to do before releasing it for service?
So I kind of hold a very high standard because I look at the way once that dog leaves me, you know, whether good or bad, they're going to be wondering who trained that dog. And there's a higher level of expectation when you're talking to service dogs. You know, at a minimum, that dog's going to be with me for at least 16 weeks on a board and train. And then me and that owner are going to be training for months on end. So before the dog is even thought of coming in for training, we have a very strenuous evaluation process. They have to be extremely neutral to their flanks, to their face, to their ears, to their mouth, to brushing, to paws. I mean, I have to make sure that that dog is showing no signs of aggression or adverse behavior. If it's a lack of confidence, it's not the end of the world because you can do different things to build confidence. But it's making sure that the owners are really on board with heart and soul, because the amount of work that they're going to have to put in, this dog is no longer just a pet. It right. has a job. And if you do not hold that standard throughout, you will fail. And you will set your dog up for failure. And it's one thing if you teach your dog to sit, stay at the door, and you can work basic obedience. But when we're talking services, these are specific tasks that are taught to the dog to benefit somebody's disability. Mm-hmm. And your dogs are the reason, I believe, that the old saying of if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, came about, because dogs will find loopholes in everything you do and jeopardize it. If it means they can get to the reward faster, oh, by God, they will do it. So you really have to be on your toes, and then they can attest to this firsthand, because when you're even working a therapy dog, a lot of those things are very similar, because when you're out in the public and engaging with so many people, you have to make sure that you know exactly what your dog needs to know and they understand exactly what you're asking of them, and that consistency comes into play. Most of what I do with service dogs, I won't train anything I've never been taught to do or don't know how to do. I work a lot with, you know, veterans with PTSD and anxiety, where I'll teach a deep pressure where the dog will jump up and lean against them, whether they're sitting on the ground, sitting in a chair, laying down, however, you know, that specific person would like it to be trained. But that is on command, you know, so that has to be kept up with, you know, for a certain gentleman. I taught his dog a rear guard. So just a simple command of six. Now the dog will heel facing the opposite way between his legs. Not that that dog is going to alert or bite. I mean, it's a golden doodle, so they're not known for apprehension. But it gives him that peace of mind of knowing his dog is watching his rear for it. So he doesn't have to worry if he's going to, you know, Disney with his kids, different things like that. So I try to make it as customizable as possible for people, but I'm extremely transparent. If I don't know what I'm doing, I'm going to tell you and we can learn together. Or I will recommend you to, you know, one of multiple other trainers that I know that are professional and ethical, because that is one thing you have to be careful with in the dog world, is making sure people are doing things ethically and through animal welfare, because a lot of things will slide behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. I saw you out there working with Cyber, and Cyber's such a beautiful dog, and I'm so glad that my kid's daughters got to come in here and play with him for a little bit. How long do you estimate that with your training that Cyber will be ready for the pup program to start going into school?
So the fun part is once I finish up, we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
We have Miss Keith and the family.
We do. And that's what I was going to say earlier when you were talking. You have to do an exceptional amount of training of people.
Yes.
And that we have learned that through the therapy dog thing. We can undo his efforts super fast. And so.
So at a minimum, and it all dictates dog per dog, you know, behaviors that's already become learned behavior and imprinted in the dog's conscious behavior or subconscious behavior. Those bad habits, like giving paw, will have to go to the wayside for me to be able to build up proper things.
I thought I was doing good.
It looks adorable.
It is adorable.
We'll sidebar on that later.
Okay.
But at a minimum, the dog's usually with me for at least 16 to 20 weeks in a board and train. I want to make sure that that dog knows everything that it needs to know. It is an extremely learned behavior. It is imprinted properly. They understand the communication, whether it be verbal communication, nonverbal communication, communication through leash pressure, to where it becomes into operant behavior, so the dog is offering it. And, you know, the communication goes through your verbal commands, your markers, your incidental nonverbal cues that you can accidentally imprint on your dog and they'll pick up on. And then that dog, while Cyber is with me, will go through and have to pass all three levels for Canine Good Citizen through AKC. And then we get prepped for our pet partner. So once she's finished with where I think she's going to be projected to pass everything, then she'll go back home to Kate and her family, and then we're going to be getting together weekly to do some training up until their pet partner's test, because that's that big third-party organization that also signs off and certifies for her and Cyber to be able to go work in the capacity of what they need to. And, you know, there's one thing that you learn from working with dogs is you better be flexible, because you might have an idea to do something and they have a completely different idea that day. But generally 16 to 20 weeks, and then, I mean, months of training together after that. And then, you know, for the school district, they get the continued education and training through myself and through Lauren Fins. So it's a forever process. It's learned behavior just like it is for us. You might have learned something a long time ago, or you find out for us men, we get a little bit older and things don't work the same. We're like, we can still be athletic, and we learn very quickly. That's not the case.
Right.
And that's how it is with any learned behavior. So you have to make sure you keep up with it, the dogs.
Well, there's a fair amount of creativity you have as well. I mean, the dogs will present a problem, or the handlers do, and you guys have been able to do three different ways of approaching the issue, and you one of it's going to take.
You have to be very quick on your feet. There's they hear me say my phrases a lot, and I say them because I need them to become learned behavior for them. But the biggest thing is you work the dog in front of you. So what I mean by that is not necessarily whether it's Piper or Cyber or Junie. It is what that dog is presenting to you at that time. Because I'm sure you know, for any of you that have dogs, every day is different with what your dog is doing.
Yeah.
You may have come out with the idea of working, you know, some stability and recall, but all of a sudden your dog's showing adverse behavior to your leash or your collar. Well, the first thing you have to do is be adaptable and work what that dog is presenting you. So working your dog in front of you, make sure that you're doing everything proper and justifiable to your dog, because if we don't teach them the right things, we can't expect them to perform the right things. So, you know, like Kate said earlier, the hardest part for me and most trainers is teaching the people to get out of their ways, because we are creatures of habit.
That's right.
And, you know, just because someone passed some things down through lineage of what you thought you were supposed to do with dogs doesn't necessarily make it facts. So, and
right.
The benefit nowadays is training has changed quite a bit, and we know a lot more about how to use psychology in our benefit and how to use that to imprint behavior properly and building hope for the rewards the dog actually wants to offer behavior while neutralizing. There's so many different things. I know we could fall down Pandora's box and I could go on a tangent, so I'll prevent that and let you go on to the next question.
Well, I could ask you 100 questions because you just have so many wonderful answers over there. And maybe we can sit down on the sideline and talk about training people sometime.
People too.
But for all the people out there listening, how would they get a hold of you? How would they know about you as far as Down and Dirty and contact you? Do you have a website and all that?
Yes, so the best way is to call or text me. So 912-677-7410, that is your fastest response. So anyone that's hearing this, be mindful, I am my only employee. So it does take me a second sometimes to get back to you. You can email me over at downanddirtydogtraining@gmail.com. Visit the website, downanddirty k-9.com, Facebook, Instagram. But ultimately, I'm a big believer in personal communication, so we're going to set up a time for a phone call to discuss. And then anyone that wants to get forward and move forward with some training, I do offer free in-home evaluations. So I'll actually go and meet with everyone, meet with their dog, and make sure that what I can offer is right for them or right for their dog prior to them spending any money. So.
And I do want to reiterate that Kirk is exceptional. We have been working with him for over a year now.
Yeah.
Through the PUP program, and he has worked well with us as people, as educators, as well as our dogs. And in fact, I trust him enough to send Cyber to him when it comes time. I mean,
thank you.
I was very plain spoken about the fact I wanted her to go to him. So he's exceptional.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ms. Warner Shelton, you're with the FM County Animal Shelter. We brought you on here because, you know, we want to help. Obviously, we want you to educate us about the animal shelter. There's a lot of, I'm sure there's a lot of people, things that they don't know that goes on at the animal shelter. And we also want to know some of the challenges that are facing the shelter that the public can help with. And I know talking to you on the phone, you said, I got some things we could get the community involved. You said, I want to get the outreach. I want to get the people involved. So I just want you to tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go into the challenges.
Well, first off, when you guys get ready to put every dog in the school, we can help you. Those shelter dogs can be trained to be service dogs. So keep that in mind when you're getting ready to do that. And I have done that when, to tell you about myself, I work for Camden County in the shelter down there, which many of those dogs went to Border Patrol. They would come in and look at the dogs, and so some of those dogs went down for that. And I worked there for 9 years, and then a spot came out on to be on the road for animal control, so I did that for 18 years with Camden County. And then I got old, and being out on the road with mean dogs and mean people, I decided that I needed to make a change a little bit, so because I couldn't watch everybody at once. So, and I was getting older, and my daughter lives in Bullitt County, so I saw that Effingham needed a director, and I applied for that, and I got that. And I'll be here with them 10 years in February. When I got here in Effingham, they were taking over 2,500 animals a year, and over 1,600 of those were euthanized every year. So with the background I had with animal control and another shelter and some classes with HSUS that I've taken and NACA classes, I started getting Target Zero involved, which they're no longer, but they're part of Maddie's Fund in Florida, and implementing some programs that they had brought to our attention. And one of those is shelter diversion, trying to get people, which would be the community, to be involved with the animal welfare business. One of the things is the barn cat was the big thing that I got. We just hit over 3,000 cats that we fixed. We've been doing that program for 6 years. And so when we did that, we took in 3,000 less cats into the shelter, which also we took in however many offspring that they would have had as well. So we have dropped our numbers down to just around 700 this year that we've taken in, which means we've euthanized just under 300. So we've done very well with those numbers, but it's still not good enough. I want to do better than that. But I can't do any more by myself. My staff and I need the help of the community. So we encourage you to become fosters, and if there's dogs that are out there, we can foster those animals. You can foster them with rescues. We can hook you up, give you resources, whatever you need. We have a food pantry now. Instead of you giving up your animal because we know the economy is difficult, we can help you feed that animal. There's other organizations that I can point you to if you need help financially. Possibly with if people have moved and they need deposit assistance, we can help you with that. You just have to call us at the shelter, and we can point you in the right direction. So that's the big thing that we're working on right now, all the things that we have done, and positive prison program with Kirk, which actually has helped many of our dogs get adopted now because they have a little bit of manners. So, because when the dogs come in, they're usually strays, and they've not been taught anything. So we have to work with them, and the inmates have done well with that program. Yes. As well.
That's amazing. It sounds like you're bending over backwards just to get people to come and help. And like you said, we need to get the public in there to help. How many dogs and cats do you have in there now?
When I left on Friday, nobody, unless somebody was adopted, because I left because I come in so early, I leave a bit, little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. So the shelter's still open. I don't think anybody was adopted, but there was 31. But a couple weeks ago, we had well over 60. Mm-hmm. But I had many rescues come in, and so I had rescues pull several of those dogs. And we did have a few adoptions, which picked up a little bit. Dogs we have not done as well, and I think the economy has a lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. They're harder to move around with. We usually have big dogs at the shelter, and people are going towards cats now, which I don't have a lot of cats because we do the barn cat program. Mm-hmm. So people think of a municipal shelter as a rescue, and it's not. We shouldn't have any animals there. We should only have, you know, dangerous dogs or quarantines and, you know, doing welfare. We shouldn't be a rescue where we have adoptable animals. So that's the goal. I just put scanners up around the county. So if you find a dog on the weekend, there's 4 scanners within the county at fire stations. You can take an animal over there. You can scan it, see if it has a chip. There's a phone number up there. If it has a chip, you call that phone number, and that chip company will call the people who own the dog or cat, whichever it may be, and then they'll make contact, and you hang on to it until you can get it back to the owner. So that has been very popular and very helpful. So hopefully that'll go well.
Do y'all have any, like, adoption days or announce any adoption days where you could promote the people to come in to meet the dogs?
Well, every business hour that we're open, and we have different hours, but when we're open during business hours, yes, we have adoptions. All our animals are on petfinder.com. That's the best place to go look at them. It's ecas.petfinder.com. Mm-hmm. It'll show you every adoptable animal that we have. The Sheriff's Department's Facebook page and our Facebook page, as animals come in that are found, we post those to try to get them reunited with their owners. So we do that as well. If there's an animal that you do come across that you think that you might want to keep, if nobody comes forward, we can help you set that up so that you can do the stray hold. And then after the stray hold is done and we've jumped all through the legal hoops and stuff, then you can become owner of that pet and then move forward with that. And we have low-cost clinics that we can, you know, hook you up with so that, you know, you can get it done reasonably priced, because they do have to be spayed or neutered. That's a state law. So, and we would like everybody to spay and neuter their pets.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's a big thing. Really, it is. So,
have you had any experience in your career dealing with exotic animals that people have let go?
It's funny that you asked that. One of the things that I did in Camden County was this gentleman who used to like to, you know, drink. He called us and said there was a Komodo dragon in his garage. Oh, right? So, you know, and it's like, we're thinking, oh, yeah, right. So we get down there, and he said that it was in a culvert in his yard and stuff, down at the end of the driveway. So my partner and I lay on our bellies and stick our heads over the, and look in the culvert, and I'll be a son of a gun. There was a monitor lizard, which is not a Komodo dragon, but it belongs to the same family, and he was like 4 foot long.
Oh,
wow. You know, so, and that was a big culvert, so we actually had to get the fire department to come in, and they blew the hoses, the water hoses, and my partner, she laid on her belly there, and then I went down a little bit in case she missed him when he came through, because they're usually not very friendly, those animals. They shouldn't be pets, but she laid on her belly, and I was down a little bit further in case she missed him, and luckily she's really quick, because when they shot that fire hose through, that thing came shooting out, and she grabbed it, and I actually had him at my home for 3 weeks until I could get him into an exotic vet in Jacksonville. He had skin issues, and he was underweight because he'd been turned out. Well, Kings Bay is down there too, so there's a lot of military.
Right.
So yeah, but that was an odd call. And then my brother was a rehabber for exotic animals, so I've dealt with monkeys and mountain lions and
really,
yeah, and foxes.
Wow.
And
mountain lions.
Yeah, he had and he had Cuda, and he would come in the house in the winter, and he was kept inside a double cage outside, And I was visiting with my children, and my 4-year-old was kind of standing next to me. And Kuda liked to be pet, you know, on the head sometimes. So he walked in, and he stopped, and he's purring, and he's rubbing up against my kid. And the next thing I know, he went, and he grabbed her. And, of course, my brother and I are, you know, animal people. We've always been around animals and stuff like that. And he pulled the cat back, and I snatched my kid up, and Kuda got scolded and went, had to go back into his kennel. Because we told him he wasn't allowed to eat the nieces and the nephews. Yeah. But I do not recommend anybody to get those as pets. They're not pets. My brother, like I said, rehabbed them. People got them as pets. And then found out they were way too much and to control and to deal with and expensive to feed. And so they're not pets. Yeah. So please don't do that.
Thank you for the advice. I'll make sure I don't buy mountain lions.
Yeah.
Tell us something about the – I know you could probably go on and on about some of the things that you don't like about the animal shelter, but can you – I really want to go into the positive stuff. Can you tell us what you most like about working at the animal shelter?
I own 6 dogs from Effingham County Animal Shelter. you get to pick great animals. I mean, I have 6 of the best dogs that you could ever think of. To reiterate on what Kurt does, though, you get what you put into them for training. I have one dog that literally was feral when I took her. She would not have gone to a regular home. So you couldn't handle her, you couldn't touch her, and I decided to adopt her. And for me, right now, we're still working on it. She's a work in progress, but she's, you know, one of the best dogs that I've ever had. She doesn't get into the trash. She doesn't, you know, mess in the house. You know, she still gets upset with in the car. She's even coming to Kirk a little bit now. So, that's one of the things you get to the joy of looking at the animals that come through there, although I'm sad that why they're through there, you know, unless it's, you know, some people do have real emergencies and stuff where they need help, and I get that. It's, you know, so, but I have 6 of the best dogs, and I've had other ones from Effingham that have since passed away that Kurt can attest to. He knew both of them. Mm-hmm. Many of them he knew, and they were all well-behaved, wonderful dogs. So,
well, thank you so much for coming on the show and spreading a little bit of light to the animal shelter. I mean this genuinely to all of you, from me and Tommy from FNM Talks. We're here for you guys. We're going to be in touch with you guys, seeing what we can do to help y'all.
Yeah.
You know, with you trying to get you some animals to be trained. And right now, when I told you a minute ago or at the beginning of the show, I said we're going to start today helping you. Tommy's got something he would like to present to you.
Oh, yeah.
Can you get out?
I can. It might take me a second.
This is from Effingham Talks. We wanted to present this to the animal shelter.
Oh, wow. And,
Stillwell Pines Vet.
Stillwell Pines Vet Menus. Fabulous. Yes, some great dog food and cat food. Mm-hmm. Fabulous. Yes. Yes.
So we'll help you load it up
for
you.
And toys.
And treats.
Oh, good. Kurt can use those when he's there training.
Right.
Yeah. And we also wanted to tell you so much that
we are going to start a drive to empty the animal shelter.
Well, that would be fabulous.
Get it empty. Yeah. We're going to try to get the word out. Try to get people together on board with this.
Okay.
So everybody listening, how many animals did you say you had?
Right now it's about 30.
We got 30 animals in the animal shelter. Let's all work together as a community. And
I do have a rescue coming to take a couple on Monday. Okay. So, you know, our local rescues too. I mean, if you empty a rescue, that leaves a spot for them to pull an animal.
And this is up to us as a community to do, not necessarily for the animal shelter to take care of it. We all need to be more responsible out there too, as far as spaying and neutering as well.
Absolutely. So it's a community problem. It's not a government shelter problem. It's the community needs to step up and be responsible for the animals that enter into that shelter.
There is one thing I did forget to mention, speaking of the program that we do. So one thing that I do offer through my business, if you take in and adopt any of these dogs that have come through the Positive Changes Prison Program, you do get 2 free private one-on-one lessons with myself, you know, the new dog of the family, to help teach and learn and instill some of these new behaviors and boundaries within that home. Because, you know, it takes up to 3 months for a dog to acclimate, so they do have the opportunity to take advantage of that if they do adopt.
Yeah.
Awesome. And that's what Effingham Talks is about, you know, uniting the community.
Yeah, if you're going to adopt an animal, you really have to be aware that it's 3 days to get used to the sights and sounds in your house, it's 3 weeks to get used to the people in the house, and it's 3 months to get used to the rules. It doesn't happen overnight, and so if you call me up and say, I got to bring it back in 24 hours, you really have to commit to it. Like I said, that little feral dog I've had, I'll have had her a year in February, and that's going to be a work in progress for probably a couple years.
Awesome.
So.
Well, I just want to thank each of you for coming on, and you know, best of luck to you, Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Corbett. And if y'all guys ever need us, you know, just let us know. Like I said, we got your back, and we're going to be reaching out and trying to help y'all in the future. But thank y'all for coming on to the Pets Edition podcast of Effingham Talks. I hope y'all have a wonderful day and a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas. And we hope to see you all again soon if you come back on, please.
Thank you.
That's the plan.
All right.